Hey, you're listening to the Fanboy Strike Back Weekly Review Podcast, episode 43.
Fanboy Strike Back Weekly Review Podcast. I'm Eric.
I'm David.
And we are the Fanboys Who Strike Back. If you're new to the show, hopefully we're bringing in some new people here. We read comics every week. We select a number of comics. We don't cover the entire basis, but what we enjoy. And then we go to our site, www.fanboystrikeback.com, and we write a review of what we thought was the best book for us. And then we come here to the show and talk about it, as well as other comic news and things that we feel worth discussing. This week we're going to be talking about some news from the San Diego Comic-Con, specifically the things that got us really excited about it, as well as David has finally completed the monumental task of reading The Watchmen. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to have a little point-counterpoint here.
Okay.
So... But after that, let's start off with this week's books. And so David had to pick this week.
Yes, I ended up picking Avengers: The Initiative number 15 as the best thing that I read this week, by Dan Slott and Christos Gage. You know, we talked a little bit about Secret Invasion last week, and while I feel like I'm having a great time with the story, you kind of brought up the point that like nothing's happening, and it makes a lot of sense what you're saying. You know, it's like the new Avengers are still in the Savage Land. We're in issue 4, Secret Invasion, and not much has happened. I'm having a great time with it. I don't have any complaints, but I can understand where the complaints are coming from. So this was a pretty good week of books, and I was impressed with the Initiative number 15 because basically it's still a Secret Invasion tie-in, but what we're seeing here is one of the cadets in the Initiative, Crusader, is actually a Skrull who was assigned to come to Earth and to spy, basically, for the Empire, but kind of fell in love with a girl, and basically just fell in love with Earth. And he decides that he wants to be a good guy, and so you're seeing the invasion from his point of view, which was something that I wasn't expecting, obviously, and it was something that was really, like, nice and refreshing, and I think it helped kind of keep this crossover new.
Now, did you know Skrull before this issue?
Yeah, they revealed it last issue or maybe the issue before.
Like, okay, because apparently I forgot, and so I was really confused for the first couple pages until I figured out what was going on.
Yeah, what's going on?
I did really like this.
Yeah, it was good. Crusader is, well, 3D Man, who is part of the Initiative too. He's a Skrull. No, wait. Yeah, he's a Skrull in disguise. It was kind of confusing because he was a Skrull in disguise. He's trying to figure all this stuff out. The Crusader switches it up so that it makes everyone look like Skrulls, and that part was a little bit, you know, here or there. But the best part about the story was getting his backstory. You see how he was sent to Earth, and more importantly, like you see that he gets to Earth. And he's supposed to, you know, find and infiltrate the Avengers, only Disassembled has happened, and the Avengers are no more. And he kind of goes into a video store of all places, and he basically falls in love with a girl. And then he meets a hero, starts taking his name, and it was just, I don't know, it was very, I mean, we're reading about this Skrull, but I got very attached to this character in just this one issue. And, you know, that's not something that's easy to do nowadays. So, like, yeah. What did you think with your whole issue with Secret Invasion?
I like this, because I don't mind there being side stories. I was just tired of the side stories going back and telling things leading into what we already knew. This was a completely new story within the Secret Invasion, within the overall storyline. But it was a little side story. As soon as I got past the initial confusion, I'm like, oh, okay, I see what's going on here. I really enjoyed it. what I really liked about this was there's been a few depictions, and it's gone both ways, but there's been a few depictions that I've read that have just kind of painted the Skrulls as kind of like they're just mean, they're just bad guys. Like in the Initiative, you know, when they captured the Illuminati, or not the Initiative, the Avengers Illuminati, when they captured the Illuminati, they're like, well, I'm going to take my wife to the killings and stuff like that. Like they were just kind of a bloodthirsty race. And what this did is it kind of dispelled that, and like, yeah, the Skrulls are just kind of, you know, there's good ones too. It goes both ways. It's not like, you know, you just look at it's not black and white. And I really like that it showed a more compassionate Skrull, and just to show that there were compassionate Skrulls out there.
Yeah, no, I mean, this was a great issue. Again, I'm shocked because, like we all thought, you know, Avengers the Initiative was not going to be a good book, but this is, I mean, it's been over a year.
This really held its own.
Yeah, this is one of the most solid, consistent books that Marvel's putting out right now, I mean, in my opinion. So, so what would you have picked as the best book this week?
I would have picked The Brave and the Bold number 15. Now, I don't typically, written by Mark Waid, art by Scott Collins, I haven't bought any issues within this new Brave and the Bold series, and just for lack of interest, and, you know, there's only so much money in the comic book weekly allowance, and, you know, Brave and the Bold never made the cut. Of course, this has Nightwing on it. This Brave and the Bold, the idea of it is two heroes team up, and you get a little one-and-done story. This one is Nightwing and Hawkman. Now, Hawkman, I don't care for it all, but I'm like, ooh, Nightwing's on the cover. I gotta read that. And I open the book, and Scott Collins' art is really, really good.
Yeah.
But basically what the story centered upon is there's something big going on, and I can't even remember what the story was now. I'm like, but basically, it's up to Nightwing to kind of save all the heroes in the DCU from contracting this... I really can't remember what the hell happened in this book. I think it was some kind of virus or something. There was some kind of invasion. And Nightwing had to get all the heroes to safety, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, what it established was... It established Nightwing being an important person within the ranks of the DCU. And I shouldn't say established. It reestablished that. Because basically they make the point that everyone trusts Dick Grayson. And he really is someone that... Hawkman makes the point that, like, besides Superman, there's no, you know... Dick Grayson is the next guy to go to with any other, you know, problems or anything like that. And so I really enjoyed it. The art was fantastic. It was just kind of a fun little story. It wasn't, you know, greatly believable. It kind of took Nightwing out of the usual, like, crime-fighting universe and kind of thrust him into a bigger story with magics and stuff like that. The Dead Man was in it. I was like Dead Man when he shows up. So it was just fun. More to the point, I probably should have reread it if I was going to talk about it a little bit more. But, It was a fun book.
As long as you liked it.
And what was nice about this is I feel no obligation at all to continue reading this series if I don't want to. The next story is about Superman and Catwoman, which I like Catwoman, I might buy that. But it's just one and done, and I could just pick it up, put it down, and that's it, apparently, and enjoy it, and then forget about it. There's only so much room in my head.
Like it's like an old school comic, like comics used to be.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed that.
That's cool. Uncanny X-Men number 500 came out this past week. This is Brubaker and Matt Fraction. They're now co-writing the book. And this is probably the biggest thing to happen to the X-Men since Messiah Complex. This is... Basically nothing has happened to the X-Men since Messiah Complex. And this is the first thing that's actually happened. The X-Men are now officially based in San Francisco. They are operating out of San Francisco. It doesn't really... I mean, it's not the school. It's more of the base. But the team is back together. The X-Men are officially not disbanded anymore. You know, I've been lukewarm about Brubaker's run on X-Men. Maybe it's just because I expect so much from him with all of his other books. But, like, he hasn't really grabbed me yet. The basic plot of this story was the X-Men, or it's more of a San Francisco tale. It's just, you know, the X-Men are getting to San Francisco, and the real big difference is that they're accepted in the city. They have the support of the mayor. They're getting backed. And that's kind of a cool change of pace. It's a little bit weird, but it's you know, it's a nice direction to go. Magneto shows up, and Magneto starts activating Sentinels to fight the X-Men. At this point, I'm getting really, really upset because Magneto no longer has his powers. So I'm jumping all up. I'm getting so, you know, pissed off. The High Evolutionary comes into the tale, and the High Evolutionary is this... I don't even know what the story with him is. He's maybe an alien that has all this higher intelligence, all this stuff, whatever. Basically, you find out that the High Evolutionary was working with Magneto and gave him a suit that replicated his powers. So that was cool. I was like, okay. I mean, at least I know that Brubaker knows what he's doing, Fraction know what they're doing. Overall, I was more excited about this story than I have been, you know, in any other X-Men story other than Legacy for a while. My only gripe about this is Greg Land's art. Greg Land and Terry Dodson, they're taking turns on this book, so they basically drew half each, and that can be a little bit jarring sometimes, you know, all of a sudden going from one artist to the other. I love Dodson. I like Greg Land's art when it first came out, but now I can't stand it.
Well, those two styles don't really mesh too well in my head. Like, they're not
similar. No, they're complete opposite. I mean, Terry Dodson kind of has, you know, more of an animated look, and Greg Land's pretty much, you know, a lot of people have said this, and I didn't want to, like, believe it at first, and I kind of wanted to stick up for him, but, you know, it seems like he's kind of a tracer, you know, like, you know, when you see Alex Ross's art, you know that was based on a person, but there's something different about his art. When you see Greg Land's art, it just looks like it's a person. I don't know, like, it doesn't even look like art to me. It's just, it seems so... I don't even know what the word is. It seems lazy, and all of his women are it's just too much. They're way out of there. There's always these really, you know, arms out, look at me poses, and it's too much.
You know, the rumor he photo references from porn. I mean, that's what it kind of, that's why it's so over the top.
I did not know that rumor, but that makes more sense now.
Yeah.
So it's just, I don't know, I mean, it's too cheesy, it's too much, it seems too fake. Like, his art just takes me out of the story, completely. So, I mean, I assume that he's probably going to be on the book for a good while. I love Terry Dodson's art, and I thought the story was pretty cool, and it's better than the X-Men have been in a while, so.
Well, I had to kind of chuckle when you were talking about Magneto and your continuity freak out there, because here's a book that made me mad this weekend. It was Two-Face Year One.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I picked this up, too.
Did you read this? Okay. Now, I understand why they're doing it, because the movie came out and Two-Face is a big part of it, and they want to cash in on that. Fine. Okay. We already have a really good established Two-Face origin in The Long Halloween. Now, okay, if you're going to do another interpretation of Two-Face's origin just for a one-shot or a two-shot or a miniseries, whatever, I can understand if you do want to do that, but I would expect maybe a little bit more liberty taken. With this, what we got was something that seemed at first like it was going to be set within the Long Halloween storyline, because there's a lot of references to it. There's references to the holiday killings. There's references to the Falcone family. The board that Harvey's putting together has the Maronis on it, the Maroni brothers from Dark Victory, and
his assistant Vernon.
I mean, there's all kinds of references in here, and then what they do is what I thought they might just dance in and around moments within the Long Halloween, but no, what they do is they just kind of move pieces around to where things happen differently, and what it does is it comes down like a really watered down version of it, and what it reads to me like is like kind of average fan fiction. And I was like, okay, well, you know, if you're gonna do it, just have fun, you know, do your own interpretation of it. But that was not what happened here. And so, like I said, it just felt really watered down. And I'm like, well, why does this book exist? What's the point of it? you know, if you want people to go read Two-Face, or, you know, re-release The Long Halloween or something like that. But, you know, it's Probo comes in making money. But that, I just did not like this story at all. By the end of it, I was just mad that, like, no liberty was taken with the character. There was nothing original about this book, and that's what I didn't like.
Yeah, I actually liked this issue, but I just didn't understand what was going on, and like you, it kind of took me out of it, because if it had no, well, I don't even know, like I was going to say, if it had no relationship, and if it didn't even reference Long Halloween, it might have been an okay story, but I thought, like, I figured as soon as I saw Holiday, I was like, okay, well, this is the Long Halloween, but it's just, we're going to see it all through the eyes of Harvey Dent, which that sounds like an awesome story, you know? Like, just doing that story, but just saying, this is Harvey Dent, this is how he saw everything, this is what happened with him. I mean, that is the Long Halloween, but I understand if you want to make, you know, some cash, the movie's coming out, do that, and I'm like, that'll be a cool story, I'll read that. I didn't understand what this was, you know, especially when all of a sudden he started, like, killing all the people and tearing their bodies in half, and I was like, where is this coming from? Because this is, like, in the middle of the story.
Yeah. But
I don't know. I mean, are you going to get the second issue?
Probably not, no.
All right. I mean, I'll probably pick it up. I thought it was entertaining.
I liked the art. Jimmy Palmiotti's art was beautiful. And I was just, like, upset because I've read other origins of Two-Face before The Long Halloween came out, and, like, in the 80s and stuff like that. And, you know, if they just took a different take on it, I would have been much more happy with it. But, you know, it's like they were trying to go within something, then, I don't know, at the last minute, they just lost their nerve and decided to, like, change things up. Or it's like they were trying to go along with it and forgot where things were. So,
mm-hmm.
I was just upset by it.
How about Green Lantern Corps number 26?
Now, this was good. This was very, very good. Peter Tomasi still just rocking this book. And, you know, I love everything about this. The art was beautiful. There was a lot of emotion in this book. It really showed, like, the type of Band of Brothers feel that the Corps has. And, like we've said over and over again, the Corps now more than ever feels like a kind of a military unit. And, I love it. And I love them bringing Mongol back, even if he's not the original Mongol, but bringing back the Alan Moore flowers, those things were great. And I love the little fly Green Lantern, you know? And
That fly Green Lantern, he stole the show on this issue.
He had a little moment, and it was great. And so, I loved the end. Like, you think that's the end of Mongol? He looks kind of done.
You know, I mean, they made a case of showing his body, so I don't think he's done. He'll be
It was damn good, and I am loving this book just more and more and more. Like, for what started off kind of weak as a secondary book, you know, it's showcasing two of my favorite characters in the DCU, Guy Gardner and Kyle. But, you know, I've been reading Green Lantern for a long time, but it's never felt so cohesive before. The whole...
Yeah.
Idea behind Green Lantern, and I love that. I absolutely love that. This book is fantastic.
I love the part at the end, because this had to do with the Black Mercy plants that can either enlighten you and, like, make you feel good, or show you your worst fears. And at the very end, the plant, which is Sentinent, gets offered both a Green Lantern core ring and a Sinestro core ring, and it chooses itself to, you know, get rid of the Sinestro core ring.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really cool moment. And it's always cool when there's, you know, when a new member of the core, you know, comes along.
Yeah. No, it was great. So it was fantastic. Yeah,
so, I mean, again, who would have known that we would be loving Avengers the Initiative and Green Lantern Corps? I mean,
I just don't get, like, why Tomasi isn't on more high-profile books right now. I mean, he's on good.
He's getting there. I mean, everyone's loving him.
Nightwing and Green are great, but, like, you know, this guy, he should have some high-profile stuff going on.
I think we're going to see a lot of him soon, especially after Requiem. That sold good, and that got a lot of positive buzz. So I think Mr. Tomasi is going to be going to some pretty high places here.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, last book I want to talk about is Robin, number 175.
I actually want to know about this. This is the spoiler stuff, right?
Yeah, this ties into the Batman RIP storyline too. So Stephanie is back. Have we talked about that on the show?
Last time we talked about it, you said that Stephanie was back, but I don't remember how she came back.
Okay. Well, basically, the way Stephanie came back, and this was several months back, was when she died, she was really, really hurt by the Black Mask, and she was taken to Dr. Tompkins, who was an ally of Bruce's, for treatment. And basically, the way it played out was, it appeared like Leslie Tompkins had denied Stephanie medical attention and let her die to prove a point to Bruce for putting young people in harm's way. And it was an awful, awful story, because, like, Tompkins has always actually been a lot like Alfred, and she was a great part of the Batman universe, and then they kind of cast her out, and Batman said, you know, I'm not going to report you, but you are never welcome back in the country again, and she was cast off to Africa. And that was the end of the War Games storyline. So, spoiler pops up in the Robin books a while back, and it does turn out to be Stephanie Brown, but what they did was basically... They retconned it, and it was a good retcon because it needed to happen, but basically they say, like, Stephanie, she didn't want... They had to get away, basically. They had to get out of that life for a while and kind of reevaluate the situation. They went to Africa. Her and Leslie both went to Africa and were doing aid work. And so it was set up, it was a big setup to fool everybody that she had died. And so it was kind of odd. She comes back, and Bruce... acted like he kind of knew. He's like, I always suspected that she wasn't really dead. That's why there's not a trophy case in the Batcave and stuff like that. It's kind of clumsy. I'm glad that they did it. It was a little clumsily executed, but you know, I was glad it wasn't a Lazarus Pit or something like that. But the ramifications Tim had with it, you know, he was really excited at first, but also he's very upset that he didn't know. Like, him and Stephanie were boyfriend, girlfriend, they were very close. And he's kind of had this nagging, like, thought in the back of his head, like, why wasn't he told? Why, you know, why did she make him think that she was dead? Like, put him through all the grief, because that was, like, right when Connor died, his dad died, and he lost her, too. It's like, you know, why put him through that? He's a little upset about that. So, but on the same hand, Stephanie has really come back into this book and played a much more supporting character role, and she is fantastic to have in this book. It is so good to have Tim have someone like her to play off of, and also she kind of balances him a little bit more, because he's been going a bit more dark and dark and dark lately, so she kind of acts to him the way he is supposed to act to Batman, and so that's kind of nice, because someone needs to bring him back from the brink a little bit. So what we get in this book is we get some flashbacks. Basically, Tim has noticed Batman's gone. He's worried that Batman's gone crazy. He has this case book of Bruce's from all these old cases that he did in his early days, and he's looking for any clues that might have triggered him, because he knows that about the isolation experiment. He knows about basically what's been happening in Morrison's Batman. And so we get glimpses of what Bruce and Dick and Tim were doing throughout the 52 storyline, they were at an end of Parabat, and then Bruce was in the cave cleansing himself, and Tim and Dick go off to have their own adventures and stuff like that, which were kind of cool. But the way this ended was he's trying to track down Batman. He's afraid Batman's lost his mind, and Stephanie kind of laughs at him. She's like, he's always been crazy. You know, we're all crazy. Look at us. You know, just stand back and look at us. But he's like, no, he's gone over the deep end, and he's really kind of going all out to find Bruce. And Stephanie asks him, what are you going to do? And Tim replies, I'm going to take him down. And the last shot is Tim standing, you know, up on one of the skyscrapers with the bat signal in the background, very suggestive that he might take the mantle, which is one of the big, you know, questions of coming out of RIP. Is it's pretty clear Bruce Wayne will not be Batman. So who will be Batman? It wasn't a perfect issue, but it was fun, it was good, it was very interesting, it was finally something comprehensive out of the RIP storyline. So it's nice to see that other characters and other books are noticing what's happening to Bruce. And Yeah, Tim has really been stepping up lately, and like I said, he's been going darker and darker, and it's nice to have Spoiler back, but, you know, even for his, he's 17 now, but even for his age, like, it's very possible that he could become Batman.
Okay, all right. Okay, well, I think that does it for this week's books. So, I've been hearing about this little book called Watchmen for, like, forever. Some call it a modern masterpiece in terms of graphic novels, written by Alan Moore, art by Dave Gibbons, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think. And we talked about the Watchmen trailer last week, and I talked about like how I wasn't really excited about it because I haven't read the book. And so this past week, I read the book. I didn't like it.
So you talked about this a little bit on the boards.
Yes, there it is on the forum.
So, but talk again about what specifically did you not like about it?
I do not think that there was a story to Watchmen. It was very character driven. I think it was too character driven. Oh, and by the way, there's going to be spoilers here. Like, we're going to talk about everything in Watchmen here. So if you have not read Watchmen, you might want to pause the podcast or fast forward a little bit because we're going to spoil things. I liked some of the characters. I just didn't. There was not an overall story to me.
The story is the investigation of the murders that are happening.
Right, but here's the thing. It's like there was nothing to it. Like, I just felt like it was building up, and it was building up, and it was building up, and then out of nowhere, they're like, oh, it's Ozymandias, he's going, like, I think my biggest problem with Watchmen was this. It was so, like, steeped in reality. It was so, like, what if superheroes were real? I mean, even Dr. Manhattan, whose powers are, you know, he's basically a god, even his origin was based in science. But then when we get to the end, Ozymandias is like, well, I created a monster, and I implanted a psychic's brain into it, and then I'm going to use that to destroy half of New York City. And I was like, what? This has, like, this is, that tone is, like, nothing like the rest of the book. It's so, like, I just felt like it was going, and then it just fell off the rails, and I was just like, this is horrible.
See, I love that, because that's, I mean, he's the smartest guy in the world, yet he, like, he feels alone, but, you know, he devises his plan. It's basically like Linderman on the first season of Heroes. It's exactly like that, only the chilling part of this was Ozymandias, he does it. He pulls it off. Like, that was what was so shocking about it, to me anyway. Like, when I got to that panel, I was like, I'm not explaining this to you like a Bond villain, you know. I did this 25
right,
minutes.
And he's like, I did it. And I thought that was cool. I just, like, I don't know. I would never attach to any character other than Rorschach, and then he dies at the end.
Well, I think it's...
And you're supposed to... I mean, it's his story.
Yeah, I think it's... It's hard to get attached to a character when, you know, it's only, like... It's one book. You haven't read these characters for years. But, I will... To be fair, it is... There is a lot of exposition in this. It's very... It does get very drawn out, especially with the pirate parts and things like that. I really like this book, and like, I can see, like, there's definitely a lot of skill, and I think a lot of it is being set in 1985 with the Cold War, with the threat of nuclear war, and what a big thing that was at that time.
No, and I definitely agree, and I'm worried about how that's going to play out with the movie.
Well, the movie's set in 1985.
I know, but it's just, like, it's gonna have to be, like, we were kind of talking about, like, it's gonna have to play up the Cold War, and I feel like a lot of people, I mean, kids don't even know what the Cold War is, you know, they're not gonna understand that stuff, and which is neither here or there, because this is not gonna be a movie for kids.
No.
But, I really liked the Dr. Manhattan stuff. I thought he was, I think that, like, when Bendis started doing Ascentury, I think he was kind of thinking about Dr. Manhattan. Because he's this character that is so powerful, but, like, he has lost touch with his humanity. And I thought that was very, very interesting. Like, I was very captivated any time he was on screen. And, like, I've never seen anything like it where... Because he can predict the future. He kind of knows what's going to happen. And so when he's talking about things, he's constantly talking about things that have happened and that are already going to happen. So when he's talking to Silk Sapphire, what's her name? She's always really... Is that Star? What's her name?
Silk Spectre.
Silk Spectre, okay. She's always really frustrated because he's not making sense. But to the reader, it always ends up making sense because you'll see something later. I thought that was really cool. Overall, I did not like this at all, though. Like, I was so, like, put off because I've been hearing... It just seemed like it was so, like, overhyped. This is in no way a modern masterpiece to me at all.
Well, it chalks up to different tastes. It's hard when things are built up a lot. It's definitely not, like, the greatest thing I've ever read, but it's definitely, like, it... I really, really do like it, though. Like, I have the Absolute Edition on my bookshelf, and I'm going back and rereading it again now. Since I saw the trailer, just because I got excited, and like it, the more I read it, like I streamlined it a bit because I skipped the parts now. I feel like I did that once, I don't have to do it again. But I just really enjoy it. There's just so much little twisted stuff that gets me. Like I really enjoy the 1940s Minutemen aspect, and there was, you know, the new Night Owl taking the place of the old one, and how he kind of got old and overweight and things like that, and he kind of misses that lifestyle a bit. I like the idea of the heroes going into retirement and then coming back. That's been played out in other stories too. I mean, there's a lot of pieces, but I did enjoy the overall story of, something with the world on the brink. What would it take to make it, you know, world peace? Basically, what would it take? And okay, yeah, I'll agree that the alien idea, that aspect of it's a little hokey, you know. But whatever plot device they used it. Like, they succeeded. And so that's what I thought incredible about it.
It was too much for me. Like, Dr. Manhattan just straight up killing Warshak at the end. I just felt like...
But at the end when they found Rorschach's journal, and it's like, you almost want more, because you know it's just all going to come unraveled at that point.
That's true. Like, I felt like there should have been more of Ozymandias throughout the whole... Like, I feel like it should have been alluded to the fact that he was doing something wrong, and it wasn't, like, at all. And I thought that that was a point that I was just like, okay. Because if it was one of those things where it's like, oh, he's behind this, and I should have known, but it's like, that was the one character that they ignored the whole time. It was like, he stopped being a hero, he's doing his own company thing now. Oh, he's a bad guy. Like, I don't even want to see the movie.
Well, I mean, it's not just stark black and white like that. I mean, they didn't pay attention to him, I think, for purpose, because they leave him out, and, like, at the end, like, he's the one person who you don't know what they've been up to, really. And the fact that
that's the problem that I had, though. I just felt like you should have been transitioned into it, where I thought it was black and white, where it's just like, this is him, we don't know about him.
Well, I mean, to each his own. He's a bad guy. It's a matter of taste and stuff like that, so... Well, I'm happy that you finally read it. At least you know now.
I'm reading a lot of crap that I have never read before. I just read The Killing Joke, and I like that. So my next, I finally read the modern masterpiece of this Watchmen.
So you're half and half on Alan Moore right now.
Did Alan Moore write The Killing Joke?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, so, you know what I'm tackling next?
What?
Dark Knight.
Are you going to do it?
I'm doing it.
Now that's...
I have it. It's next.
One of the best things Frank Miller ever did before he went crazy.
Well...
And the good thing about Dark Knight, I want you to read that because it has some really good Harvey Dent stuff in it too. And I want you to read that, and I'm really curious because it has a lot of fist-pumping moments in the air, so...
Okay.
So we'll see what you think of that. I'm glad that you're expanding your horizons a bit.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that.
so
all right.
Watchmen movie though, I'm curious. Are you like totally put off now? You're like don't even care to see it?
Yes, I am. That's exactly how I feel.
Really?
I will probably see it just so that we can talk about it. But there is absolutely nothing in me that wants to see the movie.
Wow. Okay.
That's weird. I want to see even less than before I read the book. And again, I'm not, okay, you know, just for people listening out there, I'm honestly not trying to bash this book. And say, like, I can see how people might like it. It was just, to me, I wanted way too much. And I'm sure the fact that it's been overhyped in my mind, it's this big, huge masterpiece, played a big role. I'm not disrespecting the book as, at, you know, what it is. I'm just saying, I personally did not like it.
Alright. Well, besides the Watchmen stuff that came out of the San Diego Comic-Con this month, or this weekend, which I was keeping tabs on, there's been some great posters that came out, a lot of other stuff going on. What specifically stood out to you on the news side from this weekend that got you excited?
Well, there's a couple of things that we're going to talk about, but hands down, the biggest thing that came out of Comic-Con to me is Geoff Johns and Ethan Van Sciver doing Flash Rebirth, The Return of Barry Allen.
Yeah, that's... I was slapped across the face when I saw this, because I was of two minds, and the one being like, Barry Allen is going to be back for good, it looks like, you know, it's going to happen, so I better get on board with it. But secondly, you know, it's the Flash Rebirth with Geoff Johns and Ethan Sciver. Now, Green Lantern Rebirth came out a couple years back, and I first said grimace, because I'm like, oh, Hal Jordan's come back for good, you know, what's going to happen to Kyle, and blah, 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 with Geoff Johns and Ethan Van Sciver. And that was damn good.
It was really good.
And, like, I was putting my place on that. And Green Lantern, it's pretty safe to say, as good as Green Lantern was before, it's just gone in a different direction, and it is... it's probably more of a force to be reckoned with now than it has ever been, ever in its existence.
Yeah, I agree, definitely.
And we have Geoff Johns and Ethan Van Sciver to thank for that. And so the possibility of that being on The Flash, because The Flash really has been languishing lately.
Yeah, I mean, and they did a little DC Nation panel with Geoff Johns. He kind of talked about it. And he's kind of upfront, you know, he's upfront about, you know, he said that his goal, part of the goal anyway, is that he wants, because basically what they're going to do is they're going to do the Flash, or Flash Rebirth, they're going to have all the speedsters in it, and they're going to do exactly like they did with Green Lantern Rebirth, and he said that the goal is to get fans to like Wally's kids, because he knows that, like, the direction of the Flash is, you know... And I wonder how he really feels about it, because he left that book with, like, I mean, the book was perfect. It was, like, one of DC's top sellers, and then he just gave it to someone, and that thing went down fast.
Well, it's interesting he said that, because one of the kids just died, like, last month.
Well, yeah, that's what I heard, but I don't, it looks pretty final, but I don't think that that's gonna, they're not gonna kill the kid yet.
I read the issue in the store, because I wasn't gonna buy it, but it looked final. I was surprised, because that... Spoiler alert, it was the girl, and I thought, like, if they're going to kill off one of them, at least it'd be the boy, because then the girl, Iris Allen, Iris West, she'd become the Kid Flash a la Kingdom Come, because the whole DC universe is slowly but gradually kind of been shifting in that direction, and she was that character, but no, she went down, and she went down hard, so, but...
Yes.
Here's what I was worried about, and it's nice to hear Johns talk about Wally, and, like, he won't be gone, he won't be an absent character, but the big concern I had with Green Lantern Rebirth is what's going to happen to Kyle, because Kyle is a good character, he shouldn't just sit by the wayside, and what he's done is they've shuffled him off to Green Lantern Corps, but he's flourished there, like,
right.
It's not the same Kyle stories that we got back in the 90s, but I'm still really enjoying it, and in the hands of a good writer, that's fantastic. Now, if they can, and I'm sure they will, because I'm sure Johns has a love for Wally, because he wrote him for all those years, but, like, find that same respectable place for Wally. I don't know if he's going to also be the Flash, and there's going to be three of them, or what, but I'm really curious and somewhat excited to see this. Like, I'm hesitantly excited.
You know what the funny thing is? Is that... With this book coming out, you know, the thing that I am most excited about is that I am looking forward to seeing Bart Allen again in some, you know, shape or form. Because Bart's going to be a part of it. He has to be, whether it's in flashbacks or if they're going to go back and if they're going to look at him during the Infinite Crisis battle. He's going to be in it, you know. And so that's what I'm looking forward to seeing.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean,
he's not coming out of it, obviously. He's not going to be back. But I'm just looking forward to seeing Bart Allen, you know, again. I was right with there with you. Like, I do not think that bringing Barry Allen back is a good idea. But if you are going to bring him back, there's no, you know, twosome that's more equipped to do it than these guys.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited. I wasn't at first, and it's like, you know, it's like getting in the hot tub. You know, it's going to feel good when you're in there, but, you know, you're going to got to ease your way in because it could hurt a little bit. So I'm excited.
Okay. So what about you? What give me a story that were pretty excited about coming out of
college. There were a couple of things. The one I posted on our website was the Battle for the Cowl teaser image that DC released. And going back to the Batman RIP, DC released a banner showcasing some characters from the Batman universe, and the caption underneath it was Battle for the Cowl. And DC kind of went back and they said, oh, well, that's not supposed to say that, and then they kind of alluded that maybe it was. Like, it's the misinformation thing. But on the teaser, it's Nightwing front and center. Then on one side, you have Jason Todd and Tim Drake. And on the other side, you have Hush and Catwoman. Now, this, I'm like, ooh! And it was really greatly drawn. I can't remember off the top of my head who drew it, but it's a really good-looking poster. And the thing about it is, like, okay, Catwoman's going to play a pivotal role in the Batman universe, which I love. I love her character. I'm glad she's going to be around to go through this. Hush, I think he's primarily there because he's the top villain in the Detective Comics tie-in for RIP right now. But, you know, he's, if anything, I think he will probably end up being the villain that whoever takes on the mantle will probably have to face first. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing that's it. So that leaves us with the Robins. And Dick Grayson, very cool idea, but he's already done it. So that leaves Tim Drake and Jason Todd. I can't believe they would even consider putting Jason Todd under the mask, but I would buy that book in a heartbeat if they did, because I would see how that turns out.
This is going to go back to the little teaser at the beginning of Batman, was it 676, where you saw Batman and Robin, but it wasn't, everyone's thinking it's not Bruce, and you thought it was Tim and Damian, right?
I think, yeah, it looks to me like Tim and Damian.
But wouldn't it make more sense to have, like, I figured if there was going to be a Batman and Robin, as much as unlikely as it is, I would feel that Jason and Damian would be a better team than Tim and Damian.
Oh my god, can you imagine?
Well, I think that if anyone's going to, like, you know, whip Damian into shape, it's not going to be Tim. It would have to be either Dick or maybe Jason.
I think, actually, you make a very good point. I haven't even thought about this before, but, like, Jason does have an attitude. Damian does have a very big attitude problem. Like, he makes Jason Todd back in the day look like a mild-mannered kid. But, like, you know, Dick Grayson's already done that. I just can't see them putting Dick Grayson back in that role again. It would be cool if Tim became Batman, and by, for all intents and purposes, that looks like where they're purposefully leading all of us. Mm-hmm. But he is still pretty young. Like, he's only 17. There's a closer age range between him and Damian, and they've been butting heads a lot already, so it would be hard to see them working cohesively as a really good team, especially Damian taking orders from Tim, which he doesn't, you know, it's established, like, that he just wouldn't do that. But you make a very good point. It's like, if they want to make Damian more a part of the Bat family, or make him more likable, and if they want to reincorporate Jason back in, you know, and maybe have him become a little bit more likable, if he came in and was able to see Damian, and, you know, it would be a growing experience for both of them, because maybe Jason would shape up a little bit and understand that someone's watching him, and he has to hold back. And then, at the same time, he sees Damian's attitude, and that's, you know, that attitude got Jason killed. So maybe he can impart that wisdom, and working together, you make a very good point, that if it was Jason and Damian, that would kick
ass. Have we seen Jason since Countdown in the Batman universe?
No, and that's the other thing, is at the end of Countdown, he's left back in the leather jacket again, and he's saying, you know, I've got to find my own path and all this kind of stuff. No more standing in the shadows of, you know, whatever. So it seems like from that statement that he wouldn't go back, but at the same time, I don't think people are really considering that. You know, I don't even know how many people read that last issue of Countdown. So it's fairly reasonable that, you know, no one's going to worry about that last panel of Jason and Countdown. So that gets me very excited. I would be very excited.
I would buy that. Actually, I mean, no matter what, I'll buy it. I mean, I'm not reading, you know, RIP, and that's fine because I can get all the info from you. But as soon as it's over, I plan on picking this up and seeing what's going to happen. And I don't know. I mean, maybe they're not going to have a... I mean, maybe it's going to be like a battle for the cow. I mean, maybe we're going to have, like, the death of Superman where Bruce Wayne's going to be gone and there's not going to be a Batman, but there's going to be some candidates. And that, you know, that story doesn't really ever get old.
No, and I think there's a lot, even probably more than in the Superman world, there's a lot more potential for it in the Batman world, because over the, you know, past... you know, how many decades we've had all these little Batmans in training running around, and now they're growing up, and or they've already grown up.
No one can replace Superman, but someone really can replace Batman.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's not like they're just standing up and saying, I could do it. You know, these are people that Bruce has trained. So I'm very excited to see where the dust is going to settle. The RIP storyline so far has been good. It's been decent, but at the same time, it hasn't paid off yet. And so I think it will, and it's been beautiful. Like I think it's going to make a beautiful hardcover trade, and I'm going to buy that the day it comes out. But I'm really excited to see what the aftermath of this story is.
Okay, another bit of news. It was pretty much all DC. They announced that Kevin Smith is going to be writing a Batman miniseries.
I'm not getting my hopes up about this.
He said, okay, it's only 3 issues, and he said that he's already handed in 2 of the scripts. So yeah. He said basically 2 issues are done, and he just has the last one to go.
I think just keeping it to a small number is good. He did great on Green Arrow.
His delays came from when he did Spider-Man and the Black Cat miniseries, which was 4 issues, and I think took about 4 years to come out.
Yeah, and I mean, that's rough, but... If they can put it out on time, I think it could be very, very good. Top writer who's going to be joining the Batman team is Neil Gaiman from Sandman. So I think that's going to offer.
How are you feeling? This is got to be good for you.
I'm excited. Like it seems like they're really, and I think the movie has had a lot to do with this. But
oh yeah,
I'm really excited that they're really trying to breathe a lot of new life and bringing in new talent that haven't ever worked on this character really before, other than just like a guest shot panel here and there. But I think we're going to get 2 entirely different interpretations. I think Kevin Smith's Batman is going to be far from Neil Gaiman's Batman, but I'm interested in
seeing both.
And so that, I mean, that's valid. It's valid to have different interpretations, and that's fine. So I'm excited. Like that was some big news.
Yeah, we didn't. You know, honestly, DC stole Comic-Con. I mean, we didn't really have much coming out of Marvel. They talked about a little bit about Ultimatum. They've teased that one of the Ultimate titles is going to go away after Ultimatum, or all of them are going to go away. But first of all, they're not going to get rid of Ultimate Spider-Man because it's one of their best sellers, and they announced that Mark Miller is going to come back and write a new book in the Ultimate Universe. So that kind of took care of that. Other than that, not much out of Marvel. Stephen King's The Stand is going to be made into a book, but I was a little disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't bring a whole lot to the table. I think there was a lot of big media news. I was very excited not only for the Terminator Salvation info that was coming out of the panel. Not being there, I didn't get to see any of the cool new footage or anything like that, but I've seen the trailer enough now because I've seen Dark Knight 4 times. And I'm very excited about that movie. It seems like all the actors in it have a good head on their shoulders. The director... I like Charlie's Angels, so...
It's an interesting choice, but the only thing I can say is that Christian Bale is very picky about the scripts and, you know, what he does. So, I mean, it has to be good if he's doing it.
Yeah, so I'm excited. But I think... media-wise, what really caught my attention was the Heroes Volume 3 Villains.
Yes, they premiered the trailer at Comic-Con.
Yeah, and...
Or they premiered the premiere, basically, the actual episode.
The episode, and I went to the movies on Sunday, and they played a trailer for it at the movies. And I was like, oh, I got chills.
The webisodes just started, so if you're a fan of Heroes, check out NBC.com, because there are webisodes to get you caught up.
Yeah, it's really pretty exciting. What's interesting is both, I can't remember anyone's name because it's been so long now. What's the girl with the split personalities? Jessica.
Yeah, Nikki.
She apparently isn't dead.
Yeah, I don't think anyone ever dies in Heroes.
But apparently not, because Nathan Petrelli looks like he's going to be back too.
Yeah.
But at the same
time... Which is fine. That's good.
I'm happy that Nathan's back. I could have done without Nikki, Jessica coming back. But yeah, no, I'm excited. Just hearing Noah Bennett talk about like these people he's been putting away for years before Claire was even born that could destroy the world, and he's like, they're villains, Claire, and I'm like, oh, that's good.
I think the really cool thing that I've seen when they talk about Heroes is that, first of all, they know that the strike kind of sidetracked them, and they know they kind of let their fans down by only having half a season. Plus, they talked about how they kind of screwed up last season too, and they came out too slow. And so they're like, you know, when we come out, it's going to be a 3-hour premiere, and then things are just going to happen. And I read some of the reaction to the premiere at Comic-Con, and they said that it's just fast-paced and, like, out of the gate, like, stuff just is crazy. So, like, I cannot wait. Like, I've gone way too long without this show.
Yeah, it seems like it's been gone for a really long time. And, you know, you've been waiting for a speedster character, and there's finally going to be one.
Yes, there is. It's going to be Hero's little enemy, his little nemesis.
Yeah, so that could be very good. So yeah, a lot of big news came out this weekend.
There's one final thing I want to talk about. Okay. That I'm not even sure if you've heard about it. I hope you have, but did you hear about what movie they're remaking?
Is it the Monster Squad?
No, okay. It's not the... you haven't heard about this.
There's talks about that, too.
They're remaking one of the classics, one of your favorites. I want you...
I'm worried.
No.
What are they remaking?
Think about one of your favorite action movies and just throw it out there. Something that we watch occasionally and that we love.
Like 80s movie?
80s, early 90s. Yeah, no, it's probably, I think 80s, late
80s. I don't know, just tell me.
Come on, that's not fun. You gotta guess. Action movie,
blanking.
Horribly violent.
RoboCop?
RoboCop! They're remaking RoboCop!
They're remaking RoboCop! Horribly violent.
They're remaking RoboCop, and I'm not sure if it's the same writer or the director, but they're gonna have basically the same guy do it.
So wait, is it like a sequel? Or
No, it is a remake of RoboCop. Huh. They are redoing RoboCop.
I don't know how I feel about that. I'm excited, like, I'm going to be out there in line to see it, but, like,
I think could be really good or really bad. I think RoboCop's a good idea. I mean, they can definitely do a lot of stuff with it.
It has to be gory.
Yeah, it's true. And it can't be, like, you know, I mean, if you think back to RoboCop, I mean, that was pretty cool special effects. And, you know, you can't go all CGI or, you know, CG with everything, you know, nowadays, but... I'm pretty excited about it. I mean, it's RoboCop.
It's RoboCop, but RoboCop was so of its time, though, I feel.
Hey, part man, part machine, all cop. I just want to see that poster again, and I'll be happy.
I will be there. I want to see this. I'm curious, above all.
I am so happy that I am the one who got to break that news to you.
That's pretty good. Well, I've heard about them remaking the Monster Squad, but I don't know if that's gotten anywhere off the ground yet, but...
Yeah, I've heard that's been optioned, but I don't know if that's... But, like, RoboCop is happening. It's happening.
All you had to say was horribly violent.
Yeah, I know. I figured as soon as I put some violence in there, you're like, oh, yeah. Hopefully, though, Frank Miller won't be attached to this one, so...
I kind of hope he is. Can you imagine?
I think was that the breaking point for him? Maybe it was RoboCop 2, and that was the sudden decline of Frank Miller's sanity.
Oh, man. That could be good.
But yeah, I think that does it for Comic-Con news. It was a very good con. DC kind of stole the show, but, you know, a lot of cool stuff came out of it. And I mean, Dark Knight was everywhere. It's breaking records left and right. It's the most to make, like, 300 million, whatever, in 10 days, something like that, 500 million. And, but, no, hands down, Watchmen just killed the show. Like, Watchmen was everywhere. That's what everyone was talking about. They're giving out free Watchmen stuff. They had the, what's it called? The little Archie, the little owl plane.
Yeah.
They had the replica of that there. I saw an interview with Zack Snyder, and obviously he's taking it seriously, so.
I'm excited. I really like Billy Crudup from, like, Almost Famous and things like that, and he's going to be.
Yeah, I think.
I'm excited for, you know, unlike you, I did like the story, but also just from, like, a. Art angle of it, like I can look at the book and see, like, okay, I can be impressed by the art and the talent that it took to do this. Now I think what I'm going to be doing is looking at the movie and say the same thing. Like, these are just, even if you're not interested in the story, these are incredibly arresting images in front of me.
Yeah, I mean they took some sneak peeks of the set and it's modeled. I mean, they built up a set and it's modeled directly after the book. You know, the funny thing that I got, too, from reading Watchmen is, like, I've heard so long that this movie is, like, the scope is so big and it's unfilmable, and I never really got that. I was like, if you get a good director and someone who's gonna, you know, put some emotion into it, like, I'm like, you can make this movie.
Yeah.
So I never really understood, like, you know, this is an unmakeable film. Nah, I think you'll be just fine.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people are just worried about it getting trashed, but... I read an interview with Zack Snyder, and he's like, you know, he got to a point where he heard it was being made, and there was all these awful, like, ideas of, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger being Dr. Manhattan and things like that, and he's like, okay, well, it's gonna happen, and I might as well do it, because, you know, I enjoy the source material, and I'm gonna respect it, much like he did with 300, so that's why
it's in good hands.
And, you know, he got unknown actors, so it's not overshadowed by the names in the movie, and Looking at the trailer, I mean, it looks exactly like panels from the book.
Yeah, it does. So, I mean, after reading the book, I can definitely say that.
So yeah, I'm excited by all the Watchmen hype. Who watches the Watchmen? I watch the Watchmen.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. So when David starts sighing, that means it's time for us to go. So. if you have any questions or comments for us, you can email us at contact@fanboystrikeback.com. We always like to hear from you. We like to answer questions on the air and things like that. So please write in and tell us what you think. You can also go to our website where we post our written reviews, and that's at www.fanboystrikeback.com. That's where I put the Batman teaser image. We've got some other little morsels of stuff for you there. We got information on the Flash and things like that. We also have a link to our forums, which we go on and start topics and talk about with you guys. You guys can go on, feel free to start topics of your own that we don't talk about on the show, and we would love to talk about them there. So we are available many, many places, iTunes being one of them.
Yep, iTunes, Podcast Alley, any podcatcher out there. If you like the show, please leave us a review. That helps us out, helps us get exposed to more people. If you do like the show, tell your friends, let them know. And then, like Eric said, come to the site. We post some stuff there, but more importantly, come to the forum. Especially with all the stuff with Comic-Con, we have a whole bunch of threads going on about The Flash and Batman and all that stuff. So come over there, give your thoughts. If you have any questions that you want to have us answer on the show or any feedback, you can also do that there at the forum. And, I think that's it. I'm just going to go back to being excited about RoboCop coming back.
I'm going to go watch the unrated DVD edition.
I still can't stomach that. It's too much for me. It's too much.
I got to watch it in parts. I can't do it all in one sitting. So, all right. Well, that does it for us. Hope to see you back next week. And until then, have a good one.